Welcome again, story lovers of all ages, to Classics for Kids. I'm your host, Carrie Sayer, and tonight it is my pleasure to continue reading that timeless tale, The Story of Dr. Doolittle, written back in 1920 by Hugh Lofting. Thanks for listening and for joining me for Classics for Kids. The fourth chapter, A Message from Africa. That winter was a very cold one. And one night in December, when they were all sitting round the warm fire in the kitchen, and the doctor was reading aloud to them out of books he had written himself in animal language, the owl, Tutu, suddenly said, "Shh, what's that noise outside?" They all listened, and presently they heard the sound of someone running. Then the door flew open, and Chee-Chee ran in, badly out of breath. "Doctor," he cried, "I've just had a message from a cousin of mine in Africa. There is a terrible sickness among the monkeys out there. They are all catching it, and they are dying in the hundreds. They have heard of you and beg you to come to Africa to stop the sickness."
"Who brought the message?" asked the doctor, taking off his spectacles and laying down his book.
"A swallow," said Chee-Chee. "She is outside on the rain butt."
"Bring her in by the fire," said the doctor. "She must be perished with the cold. The swallows flew south 6 weeks ago." So the swallow was brought in, all huddled and shivering. And although she was a little afraid at first, she soon got warmed up and sat on the edge of the mantelpiece and began to talk. When she had finished, the doctor said, "I would gladly go to Africa, especially in this bitter weather. But I'm afraid we haven't money enough to buy the tickets. Get me the money box, Chee-Chee." So the monkey climbed up and got it off the top shelf of the dresser. There was nothing in it, not one single penny.
"I felt sure there was tuppence left," said the doctor.
"There was," said the owl, "but you spent it on a rattle for that badger's baby when he was teething."
"Did I?" said the doctor. "Dear me, dear me. What a nuisance money is, to be sure. Well, never mind. Perhaps if I go down to the seaside, I shall be able to borrow a boat that will take us to Africa. I knew a seaman once who brought his baby to me with measles. Maybe he'll lend us his boat. The baby got well." So early the next morning, the doctor went down to the seashore. And when he came back, he told the animals it was all right. The sailor was going to lend them the boat.
Then the crocodile and the monkey and the parrot were very glad and began to sing because they were going back to Africa, their real home. And the doctor said, "I shall only be able to take you three with Jip the dog, Dab Dab the duck, Gub Gub the pig, and the owl Tutu. The rest of the animals, like the dormice and the water voles and the bats, they will have to go back and live in the fields where they were born until we come home again. But as most of them sleep through the winter, they won't mind that, and besides, it wouldn't be good for them to go to Africa." So then the parrot, who had been on long sea voyages before, began telling the doctor all the things he would have to take with him on the ship. "You must have plenty of pilot bread," she said. "Hardtack, they call it. And you must have beef in cans and an anchor."
"I expect the ship will have its own anchor," said the doctor.
"Well, make sure," said Polynesia, "because it's very important. You can't stop if you haven't got an anchor. And you'll need a bell."
"What's that for?" asked the doctor.
"To tell the time by," said the parrot. "You go and ring it every half hour, and then you know what time it is. And bring a whole lot of rope. It always comes in handy on voyages."
Then they began to wonder where they were going to get the money from to buy all the things they needed.
"Oh, bother it! Money again!" cried the doctor. "Goodness, I shall be glad to get to Africa where we don't have to have any. I'll go and ask the grocer if he will wait for his money till I get back. No, I'll send the sailor to ask him."
So the sailor went to see the grocer, and presently he came back with all the things they wanted. Then the animals packed up, and after they had turned off the water so the pipes wouldn't freeze and put up the shutters, they closed the house and gave the key to the old horse who lived in the stable. And when they had seen that there was plenty of hay in the loft to last the horse through the winter, they carried all their luggage down to the seashore and got on to the boat. The cat's meat man was there to see them off, and he brought a large suet pudding as a present for the doctor, because he said he had been told you couldn't get suet puddings in foreign parts. As soon as they were on the ship, Gub Gub the pig asked where the beds were, for it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon and he wanted his nap. So Polynesia took him downstairs into the inside of the ship and showed him the beds, set all one on top of another like bookshelves against a wall.
"Why, that isn't a bed," cried Gub Gub. "That's a shelf."
"Beds are always like that on ships," said the parrot. "It isn't a shelf. Climb up into it and go to sleep. That's what you call a bunk."
"I don't think I'll go to bed yet," said Gub Gub. "I'm too excited. I want to go upstairs again and see them start."
"Well, this is your first trip," said Polynesia. "You will get used to the life after a while."
And she went back up the stairs of the ship, humming this song to herself.
"I've seen the Black Sea and the Red Sea. I've rounded the Isle of Wight. I discovered the Yellow River and the Orange, too, by night. Now the Greenland drops behind again, and I sail the ocean blue. I'm tired of all these colors, Jane, so I'm coming back to you."
They were just going to start on their journey when the doctor said he would have to go back and ask the sailor the way to Africa. But the swallow said she had been to that country many times and would show them how to get there. So the doctor told Chee-Chee to pull up the anchor, and the voyage began.
If I could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting with a cheetah. What a neat achievement it would be. If we could talk to the animals, learn all their languages, maybe take an animal degree. I'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig, and flea. I would converse in polar bear and python, and I would curse in fluent kangaroo. If people asked me, "Can you speak rhinoceros?" I'd say, "Of carceros, can't you?" If I conferred with our furry friends, man to animal, think of the amazing repartee. If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals, and they could talk to me. If I can.
consulted with quadrupeds. Think what fun we'd have asking over crocodiles for tea. Or maybe lunch with two or three lions, walruses and sea lions. What a lovely place the world would be. If I spoke slang to orangutans, the advantages why any fool on earth could plainly see. Discussing Eastern art and dramas with intellectual llamas, that's a big step forward, you'll agree. I'd learn to speak in antelope and turtle, and my Pekingese would be extremely good. If I were asked to sing in hippopotamus, I'd say why not a mus, and I would. If I could parley with pachyderms, it's a fairy tale worthy of Hans Andersen and Grimm. A man who walks with the animals and talks with the animals, grunts and squeaks and squawks with the animals, and they could talk to him. Let me hear him talk. Study every creature's language so I could speak to all of them on sight. If friends said, can he talk in crab or maybe pelican? You'd say like hell he can, and you'd be right. And if you just stop and think of it, ain't no doubt of it, I'm gonna win a place in history. If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt, squeak, squawk with the animals, and they could squeak and squawk and speak and talk to me.
The fifth chapter, The Great Journey. Now for 6 whole weeks, they went sailing on and on over the rolling sea, following the swallow who flew before the ship to show them the way. At night, she carried a tiny lantern so that they should not miss her in the dark, and the people on the other ships that passed said that the light must be a shooting star. As they sailed further and further into the south, it got warmer and warmer. Polynesia, Chee-Chee, and the crocodile enjoyed the hot sun no end. They ran about laughing and looking over the side of the ship to see if they could see Africa yet. But the pig and the dog and the owl Tutu could do nothing in such weather, but sat at the end of the ship in the shade of a big barrel with their tongues hanging out, drinking lemonade. Dab-Dab, the duck, used to keep herself cool by jumping into the sea and swimming behind the ship, and every once in a while, when the top of her head got too hot, she would dive under the ship and come up on the other side. In this way, too, she used to catch herrings on Tuesdays and Fridays when everybody on the boat ate fish to make the beef last longer. When they got near to the equator, they saw some flying fishes coming toward them. And the fishes asked the parrot if this was Dr. Doolittle's ship. When she told them it was, they said they were glad because the monkeys in Africa were getting worried that he would never come. Polynesia asked them how many miles they had yet to go, and the flying fishes said it was only 55 miles now to the coast of Africa. And another time, a whole school of porpoises came dancing through the waves, and they too asked Polynesia if this was the ship of the famous doctor. And when they heard that it was, they asked the parrot if the doctor wanted anything for his journey. And Polynesia said, "Yes, we've run short of onions." "There's an island not far from here," said the porpoises, "where the wild onions grow tall and strong. Keep straight on. We will get some and catch up to you." So the porpoises dashed away through the sea, and very soon the parrot saw them again, coming up behind, dragging the onions through the waves in big nets made of seaweed. The next evening, as the sun was going down, the doctor said, "Get me the telescope, Chee-Chee. Our journey is nearly ended. Very soon we should be able to see the shores of Africa." And about half an hour later, sure enough, they thought they could see something in front that might be land.
but it began to get darker and darker, and they couldn't be sure. Then a great storm came up with thunder and lightning. The wind howled, the rain came down in torrents, and the waves got so high they splashed right over the boat. Presently, there was a big bang. The ship stopped and rolled over on its side. "What's happened?" asked the doctor, coming up from downstairs.
"I'm not sure," said the parrot, "but I think we're shipwrecked. Tell the duck to get out and go see."
So Dab-Dab dived right down under the waves, and when she came up, she said they had struck a rock. There was a big hole in the bottom of the ship. The water was coming in, and they were sinking fast.
"We must have run into Africa," said the doctor. "Dear me, dear me. Well, we must all swim to land."
But Chee-Chee and Gub-Gub did not know how to swim.
"Get the rope," said Polynesia. "I told you it would come in handy. Where's that duck? Come here, Dab-Dab. Take this end of the rope, fly to the shore, and tie it onto a palm tree, and we'll hold the other end on the ship here. Then those that can't swim must climb along the rope until they reach the land. That's what we call a lifeline."
So they all got safely to shore, some swimming, some flying, and those that climbed along the rope brought the doctor's trunk and handbag with them. But the ship was no good anymore, with the big hole in the bottom, and presently the rough sea beat it to pieces on the rocks, and the timbers floated away. Then they all took shelter in a nice dry cave they found, high up in the cliffs, till the storm was over. When the sun came out next morning, they went down to the sandy beach to dry themselves.
"Dear old Africa," sighed Polynesia, "it's good to get back. Just think, it'll be 169 years tomorrow since I was here. And it hasn't changed a bit. Same old palm trees, same old red earth, same old black ants. There's no place like home."
And the others noticed she had tears in her eyes. She was so pleased to see her country once again. Then the doctor missed his high hat, for it had been blown into the sea during the storm. So Dab-Dab went out to look for it, and presently she saw it, a long way off, floating on the water like a toy boat. When she flew down to get it, she found one of the white mice, very frightened, sitting inside it.
"What are you doing here?" asked the duck. "You were told to stay behind in Puddleby."
"I didn't want to be left behind," said the mouse. "I wanted to see what Africa was like. I have relatives here. So I hid in the baggage and was brought onto the ship with the hardtack. When the ship sank, I was terribly frightened because I cannot swim far. I swam as long as I could, but I soon got all exhausted and thought I was going to sink. And then, just at that moment, the old man's hat came floating by, and I got into it because I did not want to be drowned."
So the duck took up the hat with the mouse in it and brought it to the doctor on the shore, and they all gathered round to have a look.
"That's what you call a stowaway," said the parrot.
Presently, when they were looking for a place in the trunk where the white mouse could travel comfortably, the monkey, Chee-Chee, suddenly said,
"Shh! I hear footsteps in the jungle."
They all stopped talking and listened, and soon an African man came down out of the woods and asked them what they were doing there.
"My name is John Doolittle, M.D., said the doctor. "I have been asked to come to Africa to cure the monkeys who are sick."
"You must all come before the king," said the black man.
"What king?" asked the doctor, who didn't want to waste any time.
"The king of the Jolliginki," the man answered. "All these lands belong to him, and all strangers must be brought before him. Follow me."
So they gathered up their baggage and went off, following the man through the jungle.
Thank you. converse in polar bear and python,
and we would curse in fluent kangaroo.
If people ask us, can you speak rhinoceros? We'd say, of course, can't you? If we conferred with our furry friends, man to animal, think of the amazing repartee. If we could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt, squeak, squawk with the animals, and they could squeak and squawk and speak and talk to me.
The sixth chapter, Polynesia and the King. When they had gone a little way through the thick forest, they came to a wide, clear space, and they saw the king's palace, which was made of mud. This was where the king lived with his queen, Ermentrude, and their son, Prince Bumpo. The prince was away fishing for salmon in the river, but the king and queen were sitting under an umbrella before the palace door, and Queen Ermentrude was asleep. When the doctor had come up to the palace, the king asked him his business, and the doctor told him why he had come to Africa.
"You may not travel through my lands," said the king. "Many years ago, a white man came to these shores, and I was very kind to him. But after he had dug holes in the ground to get the gold and killed all the elephants to get their ivory tusks, he went away secretly in his ship without so much as saying thank you. Never again shall a white man travel through the lands of the Jolaginki."
Then the king turned to some of the Africans who were standing near and said,
"Take away this medicine man with all his animals and lock them in my strongest prison."
So six of the African men led the doctor and all his pets away and shut them up in a stone dungeon. The dungeon had only one little window high up in the wall with bars in it, and the door was strong and thick. Then they all grew very sad, and Gub-Gub, the pig, began to cry. But Chee-Chee said he would spank him if he didn't stop that horrible noise, and he kept quiet. "Are we all here?" asked the doctor after he had got used to the dim light.
"Yes, I think so,"
said the duck and started to count them.
"Where's Polynesia?" asked the crocodile. "She isn't here."
"Are you sure?" asked the doctor. "Look again. Polynesia, Polynesia, where are you?"
"I suppose she escaped," grumbled the crocodile. "Well, that's just like her, sneaked off into the jungle as soon as her friends got into trouble."
"I'm not that kind of a bird,"
said the parrot, climbing out of the pocket in the tail of the doctor's coat. "You see, I'm small enough to get through the bars of that window, and I was afraid they would put me in a cage instead. So while the king was busy talking, I hid in the doctor's pocket, and here I am. That's what you call a ruse," she said, smoothing down her feathers with her beak.
"Good gracious," cried the doctor, "you're lucky I didn't sit on you."
"Now listen," said Polynesia, "tonight, as soon as it gets dark, I am going to creep through the bars of that window and fly over to the palace. And then, you'll see, I'll soon find a way to make the king let us all out of prison."
"Oh, what can you do?" said Gub-Gub, turning up his nose and beginning to cry again. "You're only a bird."
"Quite true," said the parrot. "But do not forget that although I am only a bird, I can talk like a man, and I know these people."
So that night, when the moon was shining through the palm trees and all the king's men were asleep, the parrot slipped out through the bars of the prison and flew across to the palace. The pantry window had been broken by a tennis ball the week before, and Polynesia popped in through the hole in the glass.
she heard Prince Bumpo snoring in his bedroom at the back of the palace. Then she tiptoed up the stairs till she came to the king's bedroom. She opened the door gently and peeped in. The queen was away at a dance that night at her cousin's, but the king was in bed fast asleep. Polynesia crept in very softly and got under the bed. Then she coughed, just the way Dr. Doolittle used to cough. Polynesia could mimic anyone. The king opened his eyes and said sleepily, "Is that you, Ermentrude?" He thought it was the queen come back from the dance. Then the parrot coughed again, loud like a man. And the king sat up, wide awake, and said, "Who's that?" "I am Dr. Doolittle," said the parrot, just the way the doctor would have said it. "What are you doing in my bedroom?" cried the king. "How dare you get out of prison? Where are you? I don't see you." But the parrot just laughed, a long, deep, jolly laugh, just like the doctor's. "Stop laughing and come here at once, so I can see you." "Foolish king," answered Polynesia. "Have you forgotten that you are talking to John Doolittle, M.D., the most wonderful man on earth? Of course you cannot see me. I have made myself invisible. There is nothing I cannot do. Now listen. I have come here tonight to warn you. If you don't let me and my animals travel through your kingdom, I will make you and all your people sick like the monkeys. For I can make people well, and I can make people ill, just by raising my little finger. Send your soldiers at once to open the dungeon door, or you shall have mumps before the morning sun has risen on the hills of Jolliginki." Then the king began to tremble and was very much afraid. "Doctor," he cried, "it shall be as you say. Do not raise your little finger, please." And he jumped out of bed and ran to tell the soldiers to open the prison door. As soon as he was gone, Polynesia crept downstairs and left the palace by the pantry window. But the queen, who was just letting herself in at the back door with a latch key, saw the parrot getting out through the broken glass. And when the king came back to bed, she told him what she had seen. Then the king understood that he had been tricked, and he was dreadfully angry. He hurried back to the prison at once, but he was too late. The door stood open. The dungeon was empty. The doctor and all his animals were gone. We've run out of time once again. Thanks so much for listening. This has been Classics for Kids. Stay tuned on KTNA for Encounters with Richard Nelson.